Welcome to The Fighting Priests, a podcast exploring orthodoxy and jiu-jitsu. Two paths, one struggle. Father Ted Perestivopoulos and Father Thomas Sandberg are two orthodox Christian priests who also happen to be practitioners of jiu-jitsu. Together, they explore how these two unique worlds intersect and what it means for our spirituality. Here's Father Ted and Father Thomas. Welcome, everybody, back to The Fighting Priests. My name is Father Ted Perestivopoulos, and I am not here with my co-host, Father Thomas Sandberg. He is away today, so it's just me. But today, on this kind of rainy, mucky day here in Toronto in almost the middle of October, I have a very special guest from the States, from Ohio. Akron or Akron, Ohio, is it pronounced,
Akron.
Josh?
Akron.
Okay. I don't know. You know, it's like you read it A-K-R-O-N, but it could be, I don't know. Canadians tend to pronounce American names different. And so do Americans with Canadian names. So it's kind of like, yeah. I just want to make sure. So it's Akron, Ohio. Okay. Awesome. So I have with me actually somebody who I would say is, I don't want to say new, but it's an interesting kind of, interview today, because we have, other than Father Thomas, who himself, as everybody knows, is a convert to Orthodoxy. He converted back in 2011. Now he's an Orthodox priest. But other than him, I think we haven't had any other people who have converted to the Orthodox faith, at least in their adult age, on this podcast. We've had a lot of Orthodox Christians, lay people, priests, non-Orthodox, Catholics and Protestants and other people on the podcast. But today we have Joshua Michael Worley, who is, I hope I pronounced that properly.
Yes.
Who is from Akron, Ohio, as I just said. He is both a convert to Orthodoxy and also, a practitioner of jiu-jitsu, fairly new, since he is a four-stripe white belt, where I just was a few months ago before I got my blue. And he's been training for about 3 years, just like me. I actually took about 3 years, actually November 1st will be 3 years for myself doing jiu-jitsu. And so it took me almost 3 years to get my blue belt. But, keep in mind, we also had the pandemic, so things kind of slowed down for a while. But Joshua is in Akron, Ohio. He's a white belt, as I said, under Shannon White at True Art Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu in Ohio there. And he converted to Orthodoxy at the age of 21. Which is back in 2017, I believe, from Lutheranism, kind of interesting, and which of course is a more traditional, I guess, a branch of Protestantism, one of the more founding branches of it. And he converted into the OCA. For those who don't know, that's the Orthodox Church in America. I have a lot of experience with them because after my bachelor's, I actually went to St. Vladimir Seminary, which is down in Crestwood, New York, where I did my master's, which is under the OCA. So I have quite a few friends in the OCA and a lot of fond memories from those years. So Josh was both kind of new to Orthodoxy because, you could say 2017, right? That's like 5 years now, right? 5-6 years.
Yeah, it'll be five in December.
Nice. And also pretty new to Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu. So today, kind of we want to talk a little bit about your journey to Orthodoxy, your journey to Jiu-Jitsu, how those kind of two things intersect. So welcome to the podcast. Can I call you Joshua or Josh? What do you prefer?
Joshua.
Okay, awesome. Awesome, Joshua. So welcome to the podcast. Thank you for being with us.
Thank you. It's good to be here.
Yeah. Nice. So yeah, go ahead.
Okay. like you said, just a convert from Lutheranism a couple years ago. And then it was actually my brother got me into jiu-jitsu, and that's been an interesting experience. It was something I had heard of, but it really wasn't on my radar as anything that I thought I'd be interested in doing. But thankfully, I gave it a chance and I've been enjoying it. It's great.
Kind of like Orthodoxy? On the radar, yeah. But never, yeah. Never thought you'd be interested in doing.
Yeah.
You know what? It's we were talking offline about this, and it's like, well, it's kind of course, our podcast is all about the intersection between jiu-jitsu and Orthodoxy, which, I know is a very niche topic, yes. But not just Orthodoxy, but Christianity, generally speaking, especially traditional Christianity. But there are so many parallels. And now that you mention it like that, it's like, yeah, it's like, for people coming into the Orthodox faith, a lot of them will say, well, you know, it wasn't even on my radar because I didn't even know it existed, right?
Yeah. Well, that was kind of my story. I guess I'll start with kind of my journey to Orthodoxy.
Sure.
I was raised going to church. I remember being real little, asking my parents, like, how did God make the world? Was it magic? And they were like, sure, I guess. There was, from an early age, I guess I was kind of inquisitive about those kinds of things. We were raised going to a non-denominational church. And over the years, while I appreciated it, I always felt more at home in some of the more traditional churches. I think if nothing else, I liked them. They were aesthetically pleasing. I always liked the stained glass and like brickwork. And I never knew quite the right terminology, but having like a high altar, and some of them had the big organs. And I was just fascinated by that because it seems so different from much of daily life. Because it really is, you know, in the 21st century, churches like that contrast pretty heavily. So all that being said, eventually, once I got my driver's license, and my parents, thankfully, were pretty lenient. And I had a friend whose mother was actually a minister at a local Methodist church. And I forget what they were doing. It was something with their youth group. And he invited me to participate. I think it was something like we were going to fast for 24 hours, and it was to raise awareness and money for homeless people or something along those lines. So that kind of got me going to that church a bit more. And eventually I started playing in the like praise and worship band. I played guitar. At the time, I was kind of just starting to take guitar seriously. So that was kind of interesting in a way to have that kind of outlet. But as time went on, I started to kind of reconsider if I wanted to remain there. And I guess kind of touching on, and I'll come back to this, but touching on that idea of Orthodoxy not really being on the radar, my kind of concept of church history was always there's the Roman Catholic Church, and then any other church broke off of Rome. Because that, you know, if you kind of look at it from the angle of Protestantism and Catholicism and their kind of history with each other, that is kind of the, you know, the rough idea. So I figured, in my kind of arrogance in my teenage years, I figured I had already sized up Roman Catholicism and could definitely say I was never going to become Catholic. So I had to find the oldest Protestant denomination I could go to, you know, because that was as close as I could get. So I started going to a Lutheran church that was part of the Missouri Synod, which in the States, the Missouri Synod and I believe the Wisconsin Synod are the more traditional forms of Lutheranism. The Missouri Synod especially has retained much of the kind of traditional Lutheran liturgical practices. And there were even some people that crossed themselves. And it was actually the first church I went to where communion was declared and believed to be the body and blood of Christ. So that was definitely different from anything I'd grown up with, but I really enjoyed going there. So I went there for a couple of years, and then I actually had a friend who was raised Lutheran. And at some point in, I think late in high school or early into college, somewhere in that time frame, had converted to Catholicism. And this was 2016. I went on a road trip with a couple of friends. We went down to the Southwest. So we went down to Texas and New Mexico, and both of them were Catholic. So kind of going to an environment like that where Catholicism is more prevalent, more visible, and then of course being with two Roman Catholics and kind of briefly talking about these things, I started to be a little less arrogant and started to kind of admit, well, maybe I could have been wrong about certain practices or certain theologies. So I guess I started warming up to Catholicism at that time. And about that time, I started to look into church history more seriously, you know, church history between 33 AD and 1517, because to me, that was all gray space. I had really no idea what went on there. So at that time, I was kind of warming up to the idea of becoming Roman Catholic. I went to Midnight Mass with my friend who converted and really started to feel at home. And it was during that time that, in the course of kind of studying church history, I discovered, you know, things like events like the Great Schism and what that meant. And I realized, okay, it wasn't as simple as there was Rome and everyone broke off. It was like there was Rome, but there were also patriarchates, and there was a whole kind of what we could call like the Greek church in the East. Greek, not necessarily ethnically, but kind of that school of thought and that liturgical language and all of that. So through the course of that, I started to think, okay, well, I've kind of made up my mind that I know I'm not going to be Lutheran or Protestant anymore, but I don't know if I'm going to become Catholic or Orthodox. And then I kind of realized what Orthodox really was, Orthodoxy, I should say. So I kind of compared and contrasted for a couple of months, and eventually I settled on Orthodoxy. I felt like once I found it, I couldn't be anything but Orthodox. And that's definitely been an interesting experience, just because, you know, I'm not from any kind of background that, you know, people are typically Orthodox. Like, I'm not Greek or Russian or Serbian or anything like that. Like, my ancestry is pretty all German and English and very Midwestern American. So Orthodoxy still seems in many ways very different, but it's definitely been an interesting experience, but certainly one that I would kind of take again. I actually remember having an interesting thought to me back when I was going to my parents' non-denominational church. They had a youth group that was like Wednesday nights at 9. It was very kind of unusual like that, but it was fun. So I went to that, and I remember walking in and I thought, what happened to all of those churches in Greece that Paul started? Because of course you read through the New Testament, you're looking at the letter to the Corinthians, yeah. Ephesians, the Philippians. I'm like, well, something had to have happened to them. Either they
just, they're still there.
Well, yeah. And that's kind of what I realized when I found Orthodoxy. I'm like, there. Oh, that's what happened. They didn't just fade into the sands of time. No, they are still there. And that was kind of exciting in a way, because it was like, finally, I found it. I found that church that I kind of intuitively knew had to be there. And I remember thinking, you know, there was a time when the people in the Middle East were predominantly Christian. There, you know, there was kind of that window of time. And I remember thinking there had to have been writers like in what we now call Syria, or I guess Egypt isn't really the Middle East. It's kind of that in between Africa and the Middle East. I'm like, there had to have been some sort of early Christian community in what we now call Egypt. And then finding church fathers like Isaac the Syrian, and kind of that light bulb moment, like that's what I was looking for this whole time. So that's really, in a nutshell, kind of my story of my discovery of Orthodoxy. And then kind of at an intellectual level, I guess you could say I accepted it, because everything was very kind of led by the head. And now my experience that I'm finding in Orthodoxy is more of the heart knowledge. It's actually been kind of a challenge to adopt that Orthodox mindset. But it's been really interesting. I've had to kind of unlearn and relearn a lot of the way I see things and the way I think about things. But, you know, I thank God I have a great parish family, and I've kind of made friends over the years that are all kind of there supporting me and are always available to talk. And we have all sorts of conversations about life and theology and prayer and everything like that. And thankfully my family was all very supportive. My parents actually came when I was received into the church just last year, Labor Day of 2021. I was tonsured and made a reader by our bishop, and they came for that. And I was asked to speak a little bit. So I kind of briefly ran through my discovery of Orthodoxy and finally my coming into the church. But, you know, I'm thankful though that I've found my way here, and I'm thankful to be home.
Very nice. So question for you. So when you, cause you said you were in 2016, you were hanging out with a lot of Roman Catholic friends, and then you were softening to kind of like this more traditional, I guess you could say, traditional liturgical expression of Christianity, which of course we know is the oldest, most authentic. When you started kind of discovering Orthodoxy on your own, I'm assuming, because I'm assuming your Roman Catholic friends weren't pushing it on you. but did you what was your first point of contact beyond the intellectual? Like, did you visit a church? Did you know an Orthodox friend? Like, how did you actually physically connect for your first time?
Unbeknownst to me, I did have Orthodox friends. I didn't know they were Orthodox, but after I came into the church, a few of them approached me and they were like, "Worley, are you Orthodox now?" And I was like, well, not quite. I've kind of found it. I'm not really certain what to make of it, but I'm intrigued by it. So it would have been about Christmas of 2016 is when I made up my mind, like, okay, if I'm going to either become Catholic or Orthodox, I've got to visit a church. So I kind of knew some Catholic churches in the area and had some idea of ones that I wanted to visit, but I really didn't know any Orthodox churches, even though I realized now I'd passed them while driving and seen them and kind of put the pieces together, like, oh, okay, that's what that is. I literally just Googled Orthodox churches near me, and it pulled up a list of churches, and I kind of clicked on the first one that was closest to me, which is my home parish now of St. Elia in Akron. I clicked on that. I looked on the website. I read about they have Vespers Saturday at 5 and liturgy Sunday morning at 10. And I called and left a message on the church phone. And I just briefly introduced myself and said I would like to speak to someone about Orthodoxy. And then actually, funny enough, I was with those same friends and we were at Guitar Center and there's someone just going crazy on the drums. So it was very loud in there. And of course, of all times, that's when I got a phone call back from the priest there, my spiritual father, Father Don. He called and I could barely hear him because of the drums in the background. He's like, "You called and said you wanted to discuss Orthodoxy." Now it's like, "Yes, now's not the best time. Let me get your number. Let me call you back." So I don't think I ever actually called him back. I just showed up later that week and I went to Vespers and there were a couple people approached and they were like, "Hi, are you visiting?" And I said, "Yeah, I'm kind of on my way out of the Lutheran church right now. I'm not really certain where I'm going, but I wanted to experience this." So that was kind of my first point of contact, I guess you could say. And then later on, while I was, I read Becoming Orthodox by Father Peter Gilquist was the first book because that really made it easier for me, having someone who was more immersed in a kind of evangelical world and then started to drift away from that more toward the traditional kind of Christian worldview and the kind of big questions that a lot of kind of people with my background have, like, how do we make sense of icons? Where do we draw the, is an icon an idol? How do we properly understand, you know, venerating an icon? And what do we do about Mary? Like a lot of Protestants are, you know, I'm kind of speaking broadly, but from my experience, a lot of Protestants are still kind of wary of Mary. We're not really certain how to approach and understand that. So, you know, I kind of put my defenses down a bit and said, maybe I wasn't right. Maybe I was wrong. Let me kind of actually just hear this out. But over time, I found Orthodoxy to have, it has a more of a kind of holistic view. I think it's not all about the head knowledge. It's about the heart knowledge too. And it's not so much about getting the theology right all the time in the books, but also living life, you know, properly or correctly, however term you want to use it. Just, you know, that kind of struck me. It was different from really what I had known before. And I think one thing too that really actually made a big impact on me is the first time I went to Vespers, we have this big icon of Hermann of Alaska near the front. And hearing his life story just blew me away because I was always so sad anytime I heard about interactions, those early interactions between the kind of first Christians to America and the Native Americans, just kind of broke my heart a lot of times, the way the natives were treated. So to hear something that was totally the opposite, where this kind of humble Russian monk comes in and learns their language and takes care of them and sticks with them when there's it was like an epidemic had swept through their village and eventually stays there and dies there. And they, I believe they called him Apa, which is like their term for grandfather. like it touched my heart. And that kind of, to me, really started to pull me into Orthodoxy, where it was like, there's something different about this that I can't quite explain, but I feel like I'm on the right track here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. St. Herman, you know, it's especially today, and you know, in the States, the conversation of course exists, but even in Canada, even more so, as far as with like Indigenous peoples and things like that, and First Nations, and the kind of the colonial approach that was taken by most Europeans, and most people, because they're ignorant of St. Herman of Alaska, right? And any of the other, you know, first Orthodox that kind of came through the Alaska, you know, through the Bering, like, you know, that way from Russia, and their approach and his particular approach, which was really the Orthodox approach. Because if you look at even in the time of the Byzantine Empire, you know, St. Cyril and Methodius, who went to the Slavs, right? Like in the 11th century, that far back, you didn't have this type of imposition of like a culture, but rather an integration, like a respect for what's already there. And then also like kind of like adopting and kind of integrating into that culture, as opposed to kind of like, we're going to come in and show you what's what, right? And so it's a very different approach. And people unfortunately are ignorant of that as part of the history of Alaska, not of only, sorry, of the United States and of the, of, you know, Europeans, or I guess you could say Asians, because, you know, Russia on that side, it's considered Asia, right? But like, you know, of people coming from the old world into the so-called new world, right? Yeah, I agree 100% with you. I wanted to kind of just, and also like come back to a couple of things that you touched on. Number one, you read that book, you know, Becoming Orthodox by Father John Gilquist, of blessed memory. I actually went to school with a son, Peter John, Father Peter John Gilquist. So he was the same Vlad when I was there studying. And so he was very much like his father, and very nice guy, and very, very musical, nice guitar. And yeah, so kind of carrying over that, I don't want to say Protestant, but like definitely a Protestant feel of like using music, like contemporary music, but in a very good way, right? And bringing that into his Orthodoxy, right? And, you know, coming from that background and then like, you know, expressing it in Orthodoxy. It was really great to know him. But the other thing that I noticed that you said, you know, you went to Vespers, which is something that kind of the OCA drove home for me, because, you know, the Greeks, I don't know what's happening in the States so much these days, but the Greeks, generally speaking, are not doing so much Saturday night Vespers, resurrectional Vespers, right? Whereas in the OCA, it's much more prevalent, right? And it was big at St. Vlad's. We would do every Saturday night, we would do what is called vigil, right? So the Russian tradition is like, you're doing Vespers and Matins together. It's kind of weird because Matins is the morning, right? The Greeks do the Orthros of the Matins in the morning, right? Before liturgy. But in the OCA and the Slavic practice, it's kind of connected to what is called vigil, which is like just an extended evening service, right? So we would do that at St. Vlad's, and I carried that over into my own ministry. So when I came back to Canada and I got ordained back in, it was 2008, I've always done Saturday Vespers. I have the few churches in Canada that now there's a few that do it, but not so many. But I always do it. Like, and there's hardly anybody ever there, unfortunately. And I always do it fully in English. It's like a fully, it's like the one service I do during the week that is 100% English. And that's also where all my catechumens come. So it's like, it's always, I find the most helpful point of, and easiest, I guess to say, point of contact for somebody who's interested in Orthodoxy. Like when I have somebody like call up, just like you did, or email me or text me, whatever, and say, hey, you know, my name is this, and I'm interested in Orthodoxy. I actually don't invite them to Sunday liturgy. Because Sunday liturgy is so overwhelming and it's just so complex, right? There's so many layers of symbolism, right? And that it can be extremely overwhelming for a person who's never stepped foot in an Orthodox church. So I always invite them to Saturday Vespers. It's in English, it's quiet, it's unassuming, it's, you know, there's not a lot of people there, so it's not intimidating, right? And it's beautiful. It's less than an hour long, and it's kind of easier to understand what's going on. Right. Although very beautiful and mystical. And so I find that is kind of like such an easier way to kind of dip your foot or dip the toe into the, you know, the huge ocean that is Orthodoxy. Right. So I'm not surprised that that's kind of like the first service that you went to.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. That's how it felt for me. It was, I remember walking in and I didn't know anything like about the iconostasis, and so it was kind of nice though, because it was like you said, there weren't that many. I mean, we have Vespers regularly, so there's kind of a crowd that comes to Vespers, you know, anywhere I'd say from 5 to 10 people roughly on average. So it was kind of nice. There were people there that I could talk to, but it definitely did seem a bit more laid back. And it was just a litany. So we pray, and then we're reading from the Psalms. And then we actually kind of do a, our parish has a little peculiar practice. We have kind of a modified form where we read the gospel from Matins at our Vespers. So we have that at the end, kind of near the end. And then people kind of linger a bit. So it was kind of nice. I could kind of just walk around and look around, and people would introduce themselves and welcome me. And I think there's sometimes there's some confusion, like people come to liturgy and it's like you said, it's there's definitely more going on. And I think when, you know, like the priest brings the chalice out, people are like, oh, should I go up for communion? How's that work? And you know, you can avoid a lot of those kinds of things and kind of almost prep them and say, like, you know, if you'd like to come back tomorrow morning for liturgy, and you get a chance to explain it beforehand. So when they come in, they're not kind of going in blind. It's like they understand a little bit better, just a little bit more of what's going on. But Vespers is definitely feels like it's an easier way to kind of start to get into Orthodox liturgics and without feeling overwhelmed.
Sure. Well, you know, so you gave me a little bit of your journey to Orthodoxy, which started about 5 years ago. So like 2 years after you become Orthodox, if I'm calculating it right, because you said about 3 years now you've been doing jiu-jitsu, give or take.
Yes.
So you become Orthodox, you jump into this massive new world, and then like 2 years later, you suddenly jump into like another massively new experience. It must be overwhelming. So tell me a little bit about that. Tell me a little bit about, you know, your encounter, because, you know, or your process of becoming a jiu-jitsu player, because, you know, this podcast, I'm actually titling it, you know, Being and Becoming, right? Which is something we talk about in Orthodoxy all the time, right? You know, like that we live our lives, you know, but we're always in a process of becoming something, right? For the Orthodox Christian, of course, it is becoming Christ-like, right? To become little Christ. And this is the lifelong journey. But in jiu-jitsu, you know, one could say you're always trying to become a black belt, but even when you become a black belt, you're becoming something more after that, right? Because there's varying degrees, right? So tell me a little bit about your becoming, you know, or coming into the BJJ world.
Well, I'd always had an interest in martial arts. At some point when I was a kid, I took some sort of taekwondo class at a local place, and I don't know exactly why I stopped. I think my parents kind of asked me what I thought of it, and I must have seemed kind of indifferent to it. So they figured, well, if you're not really into it, we're not gonna, you know, keep going to this and paying for it. So I kind of just dropped out of that. But I'd always wanted to get back into something, but I never knew what. So 2019, I graduated from college and I was working now. So I had a had some more money I could kind of more money to spare and spend on something maybe that I was interested in. So I started looking at the different types of martial arts, and then of course trying to find a place near me that actually offered that. So the tricky thing was I didn't feel like I could find a lot of good schools for a lot of the things that interested me. And I had heard of jiu-jitsu, but I didn't really know what it was. But thankfully, my brother had actually started training roughly 6 months before I did. And we had a friend, well, he was more so my brother's friend that then I had seen in school, but never really talked to him. My brother's, at least in terms of grades, he was always 2 grades behind me. So when I was a senior in high school, he was a sophomore. So I would kind of run into him in the hallways and I would see his friend with him. But his friend got my brother into jiu-jitsu. And then as I was exploring different martial arts, my brother said, why don't you come Wednesday night, come to open mat and check it out. And I was like, all right. I didn't really know what to expect. So I went and I was getting, yeah, I was getting
At an
familiar
open
with it.
mat, it's not even a beginner's class, it's an open
No,
mat.
it was interesting because it was like there were some guys just going hard, like training, like sparring, and then there were other guys who were kind of just sitting around talking. So it was definitely different, which is pretty typical for our open mats. Some people just kind of drill things, some people kind of sit and talk, and then other guys are like rolling. And I remember sitting there kind of watching, taking it all in, and I was like, well, I don't really understand this, but I guess I'll give it a kind of keep going with it. So I came back next time for kind of like what is just called the adult class. It was probably a little more intermediate, so it's probably a little too ahead of myself. But where I was working at the time, I couldn't make it back in time for like the beginner's class. So I was like, well, I'll just kind of go with this for now. So I was going to that, and I was starting to understand it a little bit more. And then I think about the third time I went, I was sitting there talking to Coach Shannon, and he was like, what do you think, really? I was like, I don't really get it. Is it kind of like wrestling? He was like, yeah, a little bit. It's like, okay. And I'm like, it's just different from what I expected of martial arts. You know, I kind of had like the Bruce Lee concept of martial arts, that it was going to be a lot of like kicking and punching and that sort of thing. And then coming into jiu-jitsu, and it's like, there's no kicking, no punching. It's all grappling and arm bars and triangles and John Wayne. I'm like, this is weird. But it was kind of intriguing in a way, because I was like, one thing that I appreciated about it was there was some martial arts where it was like, before class, you would do some kind of meditation. And, you know, and I understood people said like, well, you can just pray in that time. And, you know, it felt kind of odd to me. I'm like, I don't really know if I'm looking for a place to go and meditate. Like, I want to go learn how to defend myself if I ever find myself in a situation like that. So jiu-jitsu was like, it was strictly like, we're going to show up, we're going to roll, we're going to train, you know, you can do whatever you want outside of that, but when you're here, you're training hard. So I kind of appreciated that. It was like the focus was solely on the sport. And then after a couple classes, I went up to Shannon after. I was like, all right, I think we'll make it official. I'll sign up. So I signed up, and he had some gis there. So I bought one and I started going. And I don't know, it was different. It was kind of like it's a humbling experience, certainly, because I was like, man, I thought I was like ready to go. And then going against some of these guys, I'm like totally lost. There was actually one time where I was rolling with Shannon a bit, and he was kind of had this open guard. I was just kind of standing there. I didn't really know what to do. He's like, come on, I'm not going to hurt you. And I was like, I'm not really worried about you hurting me. I just have no idea what I'm doing. So, you know, then they kind of showed me some basics, like, oh, this is Toriando. This is how you hold side control. This is, you know, you kind of grab the guy's knees and kind of push them down to get into mount, and starting to learn a lot of those basics. But I really liked rolling, even though I wasn't very good at it. I just kind of enjoyed like that kind of roughhousing, and especially going with my brother, because it was kind of like, it was something we could do together, something to kind of bond like that, and something we both enjoyed doing. So that was, there was kind of that personal aspect to it too. But yeah, it's been 3 years later, and four stripe white belt. I'm hoping for that blue belt soon, but you know, I don't get too wrapped up in it. I guess there was one thing Coach said that has stuck with me, where he's like, you know, as you're rolling, a lot of times these belts fall off and people just kind of roll them up and they throw them to the side. He's like, in that instance, it doesn't matter what color belt you are. All that matters is how good a grappler you are. When the belts fall off and you throw them to the side, he's like, whether someone's a white belt or a black belt doesn't matter. You know, it comes down to how have you worked on your skill in the sport? What have you done to make yourself better as a practitioner and that sort of thing? So that's where it's like, I don't get too wrapped up in that. You know, I think a lot of people get distracted by that, but I just enjoy the sport. I like, especially having if I have a stressful day at work, and then I can just leave at 5, go to the gym and just roll and talk to my friends and complain about life and say, oh, well, what are you going to do? And then we go back into the gym and roll a bit. And, you know, it's a good way to, definitely a good way to release stress, definitely a good form of exercise, but the camaraderie and the feeling like I, you know, those are kind of my brothers and sisters there, and feeling like they have my back. So that's kind of briefly, sure, I guess, my journey into jiu-jitsu.
Is your brother still a white belt, or has he been promoted?
He's been promoted. I don't remember when he was promoted. It's probably been a little more than a year now, but I thought it was funny when he got promoted. He posted a picture of him with his blue belt, standing next to our coach, and he put like new belt, who dis? <It's> like, he's kind of goofy like that. But yeah, so, and he's been a help, kind of in a way where it's kind of funny because even though he's my younger brother by not quite 2.5 years, he's probably a good 2, 3 inches taller than me, and definitely like, I don't know, 30, 40 pounds heavier. And he's a strong guy. So it was kind of funny. I remember the first few times when we were rolling, I would always think about our parents telling me to be nice to my brother because someday he's going to be bigger than me. And I would always laugh that off, be like, no, he's not. Like, his name's Jacob. I'm like, Jake is not going to be bigger than me. And then I'm like, oh shoot, he is. And he's a strong guy too. And so, and he it's the worst thing is he really likes the Ezekiel. So he just kind of, when we go, he goes hard and he doesn't show mercy. Not like he's crazy, but it's like he doesn't hold back. So the whole time it's like almost me where I feel like I'm fighting for my life. And I think he kind of enjoys that a bit. But I like it too because it's like it's fun to just roll in that kind of high energy situation where one guy's just going and the other guy's like, I don't know what's happening, but I got to keep up. And then at the end of it, we kind of laugh and, slap, bump, and look for the next partner for the next round. So, it's been something that I've really enjoyed, especially doing with him. And, it's something that I feel like has kind of helped us grow closer and met so many kind of friends through the sport that, we kind of build each other up.
Sure. And it's kind of like with all the I always think that the ability like in jiu-jitsu to go hard but then also be I don't know like safe is the right word like just the framework of the sport, right? Where you can go 100% and you can still tap and you can still shake hands at the end and then go out for beers. You know what I mean? Like it's not it is the epitome of or I guess it's the perfect expression or a per a one of the more perfect expressions of the multicultural society that we live in, right? Because if you notice, like you have all this political tension in the States and Canada, generally the Western world now, right? Political tension, religious tension, moral, whatever else. But when you go to the mats, like I find in the jiu-jitsu clubs, there's none of that. It's just like, doesn't matter who you are, doesn't matter what your background is, doesn't matter what your belief system is. This is one thing where it's like you respect the person for what they're doing on the mats. And it doesn't matter whether you lose or you win. Okay. There are some outliers, of course, and there are some problematic, there'll always be some problematic characters, but generally speaking, right? It's just, it's kind of like this perfect respect, right? But, you're there, you do your job, you train hard, and then whatever happens at the end, everything's fine. And this is really, really a nice expression of what society should be, in my opinion. Just this kind of respect for other people and, not getting tied up too much on like, whether I agree with this person or not. And whether they beat me or not, like whether they're better or not. Like it's just it's a humbling experience. It's a good hum it's a good humility, right? You'll see. Like the belt, like your instructor was telling you, it's like when you get promoted, you'll notice like, okay, they're gonna put it on you, and then you're probably roll unless it's at the end of class. Or the next time you roll, you're gonna notice you're rolling exactly the same way you did the day before. You didn't magically get better, right? So it's just a recognition of where you're at now, not that you're now suddenly something different, right? And you'll have that realization when you get that blue belt, you'll be like, oh, well, I'm just the same person. I'm still the same level. So I just continue the journey, right? No one really cares. We care psychologically, right? Egotistically, but but in the end, it's like it doesn't make you any better. You are the person, like you said, you are the grappler that you are at that moment, right? It's have you noticed, because you had mentioned this actually like in some of your messages to me, have you noticed any parallels, because we talk about this all the time obviously on the show, or anything common between your kind of your entrance into jiu-jitsu and your entrance into orthodoxy, like from any point of view really, like whether it be an emotional or community part, or even differences, tell you the truth, because I've noticed a lot of differences as well. So like have you seen any commonalities between the two communities, like the experience of entering into those communities?
The one thing that kind of comes to my mind, and I kind of laugh a bit because I was definitely in both of these places, there's kind of like a bit of convert zeal when you first come into orthodoxy. And you know, it's almost like because you found it, it's like everything, you're enamored, you're just always listening to like Byzantine chant, you're buying a bunch of icons and buying a bunch of books, and then at some point you kind of slow down and you're like, okay, I gotta focus a little bit less on the externals and a little more on the inner kind of life now that I'm living. And then as I came into jujitsu, I was all stoked. It was like I wanted to buy a bunch of gis and I wanted to like go to all these tournaments and watch all these videos and everything. And not that there's anything wrong with that, but it's like, well, spend a little less time worrying about what color gi you're going to buy. Like, just buy a gi and go to class, you know, and just start working on training like that. So you kind of get that like kind of excitement there at the beginning. And then it's almost like a bit of that kind of, I don't want to say honeymoon phase, but kind of that excitement at the beginning starts to wear down, where it's like, I remember when I was first coming into Orthodoxy, because I had learned a lot, I thought that I knew a lot. And the longer I stuck around the church and the more I read and the more I listened to podcasts or watched videos of a priest or a monk or a nun talking about the spiritual life and talking about prayer, the more I thought, wow, I thought I knew a lot, but I certainly know a lot more than I used to. But I feel like I've just barely started to kind of dip my toe in what in this whole kind of ocean of Orthodoxy. And I remember talking to a priest in this area and kind of telling him that. He's like, well, yeah, you're kind of like the spiritual infant that Paul talks about, you know, where you're kind of in your infancy of spirituality. And the good news is that you've kind of recognized that. Now you have it in your mind, like, okay, now I'm just really starting and now it's time to grow. And that's kind of how I felt with jujitsu a bit. It's like when I first came in and I learned a number of kind of the basic things, I thought, oh yeah, I've got this down pat. And then I started going against guys that had been training for a couple of years, and I thought, man, I don't know anything. Like, these guys are good. And so that definitely comes to mind. But I think the big thing is willing to be humble, because if you're not humble, you're not going to learn anything. You know, there are guys that they get frustrated with jujitsu because I think they expect this kind of, and there is a continuous improvement, but they expect it like, I'm just going to keep improving and things are going to get better and easier. And like, I'll face more people and I'll win more. And it's like, maybe, but you might, what I found is it's like you win some, I probably lose more than I win, but I still can tell there are times when I'm rolling and it's like, I don't even think about it. I do something. I'm like, okay, I'm starting to get this kind of on the intuitive level that I need to. And sometimes I feel like it's that way too, almost with like discernment in the spiritual life. You stop over analyzing everything and you kind of, I found there's kind of like when God speaks, it's like a kind of that quiet, still voice inside that you just can't deny, you know, is coming from somewhere else, or rather someone else. And so I don't know exactly how that connects, but that's what I found is too, is like as you start to get deeper into both Orthodoxy and jujitsu, things start to become a bit more intuitive. You stop overthinking things and you kind of, I don't want to say go with the flow, but you start to kind of go with the flow a bit, where it's like, I don't know, it all kind of starts to fall in place and it starts to click. And even though it doesn't necessarily get any easier, you kind of have a better awareness of what you need to do. And I'd say those two especially. And I think just kind of the general ups and downs, you know, they're in the spiritual life, we kind of have our good days and bad days. And I definitely have found that with jujitsu. There's sometimes I go in and I'm like, I feel like I'm on fire and I can't lose. And I'm like rolling hard every time and I feel like I can't be stopped. And then there are days where I go in and I feel like a slug. I'm like, man, I don't want to be here right now. But if I don't, I'm going to kick myself. So I kind of go in there and you kind of have to, it becomes a little more mental at that point. It's like, I know that I physically can. But I've got to find that motivation and kind of dig deep. And I think there's kind of something similar with the spiritual life, where it's like you have those days where it feels like nothing's going right, or you're just having one of those days. And to not get frustrated and kind of cry out, like, why me? But to think, you know, everyone kind of goes through these struggles, and everyone, you know, even the saints and the elders talk about kind of trials and sufferings in this life. And of course, there are saints that endured much worse than anything I've ever gone through. So to look to them as examples, and then also kind of think about the best black belt in the world right now is at one point a beginner, just like I was a couple years ago. You know, it's not like anyone's just born good at jiu-jitsu. Like, there are probably people that have, one way or another, they're more physically inclined to something like that, or it seems to come to them easier. But no one is just born, and from day one, everything's like deeply embedded in them. And the moment they step on the mat, it's like they're practically a black belt or something like that. Everyone starts from the same beginning. It's just kind of how you handle it and how you stick with it kind of determines where you go. So that's kind of, I guess I'll, that's something that I would think of as I'm kind of comparing and contrasting. I don't know if I've really noticed any kind of strong differences between the two. I guess obviously there's really no kind of spirituality or anything like that that's kind of embedded in jiu-jitsu. Like, there are some martial arts where they're very intertwined with kind of a lot of like Eastern religions, but jiu-jitsu seems to be purely like, it's a sport, and what you do beyond that, you know, you can make it into anything you want it to be. You know, like, of course we have this podcast. I think there's the Atos gym out in California that kind of has some sort of like a Christian focus. There's a group online, I think, called BJJ Under the Cross. That's kind of like a community for Christians that practice jiu-jitsu. So yeah, I guess if there were some kind of connections or some kind of contrast, those are a few things that come to mind.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree with you that even though, you know, jiu-jitsu doesn't have anything embedded in it, it's just, it's so compatible with orthodoxy, right? This is why we did this podcast, right? It doesn't even know that it's doing it because it's not, it didn't set out to do that, obviously. But it's just the type of brand of, you know, it's like a physical asceticism, right? You know, you're working hard and, you know, you're battling yourself, right? You're not battling it. You're obviously rolling with an opponent, but really the enemy and the big problem is the self. Because it's just, you know, when you lose, yes, the other person might be better than you, but why are they better than you? It's because you haven't gotten better yourself, right? Like you either screwed up a technique or you forgot the technique or you didn't drill the technique properly, right? So it's always a failure of the self. Like, that's why I love that quote from like Kenzo Gracie, where, you know, he says, you know, my opponent is my teacher, my ego is my enemy, right? Mm. And in the Orthodox Church, it's like, you could translate that. You could say, you know, the church is my teacher, right? And everything that encompasses, right? The tradition, the priest, the chanting, the fasting, all that is the teacher, right? It's the ego that's the enemy. It's the ego that needs to be tamed, right? That needs to be kind of brought into line. I don't want to say subjugation, but rather just kind of like to be tempered against that which is good for you, right? So, you know, it's this. It's so good for you, like jiu-jitsu, like just because, and it is spiritual in the sense that, like, you know, it's humbling and humility is like the chief of the virtues, at least according to the Desert Fathers, right? So without that, you can't really learn anything else, because how can you learn anything if you think you know everything, right? So I went through the same thing you did, right? And I'm cradle orthodox, quote unquote, you know, so I grew up in it, but that doesn't make a difference, because even though the experience is different when you come into it as an adult, you know, it's like the spiritual life as well as with jiu-jitsu, it's kind of like a chart, you know, like when you have like a line graph, you know, and you see like a, you know, like in science, right? Or, you know, you're graphing something and you usually see, you know, these little spikes, like, let's say it's going upwards, right? The trend, right? And you're going up, you know, you'll have like little dips and, you know, ups and downs along that path, right? These little high points and dips, whatever, right? And those things are like these little resets that we have, or these little setbacks. They happen in the spiritual life, and they should happen in the spiritual life, and they happen in jiu-jitsu, right? So, you know, when we sin, sometimes, for example, you think you're doing really, really well spiritually, but then you're going to have a setback. You're going to make a mistake. Maybe you're going to make a really big mistake in your life. You hope you don't do too many of them, but, you know, it's part of life. And then, you know, then you have to reassess your spirituality. You have to reassess where you are, who you are, what are you doing? Everybody has these points in their lives. Hopefully, if they are church going and they have a spiritual father and they're confessing, like they have a guide, right? They have a professor, they have a sensei, they have somebody to help them work through those kind of humbling moments where you question things, or you question yourself, or you question your spirituality. And then you keep, you know, you reset a bit, you drop, you know, you're humbled. God allows that to kind of keep you down a bit so that you don't get too egotistical, but then you keep rising again, right? Same thing in jiu-jitsu. You know, in jiu-jitsu, it's like you think you're doing well, and then of course there's always somebody better. Or you have, if you compete, okay, not a lot. The majority of people don't compete in jiu-jitsu, right? Like, I think it's like some, like, is it 5%? Is it 10% of people, total people who do jiu-jitsu actually compete, right? So it's a very small percentage. But even if you compete, it's like, you know, you think you're doing well. Like, even the best competitors in the world, they always lose at some point. Even if they're on the street, except Gordon Ryan, you know, it's like, well, Gordon Ryan's had 54 fights and he has lost, but he did lose at some point, right?
Sure.
And then you have this kind of reset, right? It's like I remember, it's like I had the white belt jitters, I guess you could say. Everybody has them, you know. You come into it and you're all excited, and your ego is like puffed up because you have all these like delusions in your head of what you're going to do and how good you're going to get and all this kind of stuff. And you're focusing on the wrong things. Right. And then you get a smackdown. If you have a good professor, you get a smackdown, whether it's like a verbal smackdown, like I did many times for my professor, it's just kind of putting things in perspective, and then you get better slowly. And then maybe you compete. And like, so I competed near the end of white belt because my professor said, you know, he's like, you know, you should wait. You know, some gyms, like they'll push their students to compete if they want to compete young, like right in. It's like, you know, you've been doing jiu-jitsu for a month, go to competition. You don't know anything, right? Go to competition, right? So some professors, they'll say that. They'll be like, that's great. It's a good experience. Sure, you might get your arm broken or something, but whatever. You know, feet to the fire. And then others will take the approach. They'll say, well, you know, you want to train for longevity, especially if you're older like me. Like I started at 38. I'm a big guy. I'm an ultra heavy guy. Now I'm 41. So, you know, my professor was like, well, you know, you should wait. You don't know what you don't know. You know, take it easy. Like, get your fundamentals down, drill, you know, and then when you're ready, you'll have a much more positive experience going in. So I did that. And then, and of course I did have a positive experience, because when I finally did go and start competing, which was last December, so almost a year ago, I had positive experiences because I won gold, because, you know, I had some experience now. I had really kind of developed at least as much as you can develop your game at white belt, right? You know, and so I had a winning experience. Okay, I won gold at the first competition, and then I went to the next competition, I won gold again, right? I'm like, oh, this is pretty good, right? But then your ego starts going up, right? Yeah. And then you go, and then, you know, you prep, and then. And then you get your blue belt and you jump into a competition at blue belt, right? And it's and then that's when God gives you the smackdown, right? And you're like, oh, it's like, so in my situation, my first competition at blue belt was Masters Worlds Vegas, right? So it's like, oh, let me go there. You know, I think I might not win, but I'll do pretty well. I'm a pretty big guy. I'm pretty strong. You know, I feel like I have some experience now, right? And then you go there and it's like, I won my first fight, and then I got eliminated in the second round, like in the second fight, and it just got destroyed. And I was like, whoa. And then the guy wasn't even as big as me. Although there were guys bigger than me, which is hard to find, because I'm like 6'4" and I'm like 300 pounds, right? But it takes you down a notch, right?
Sure.
It takes you down a notch, because then you suddenly realize, oh my God, you think you knew something, right? And that happens usually with belts. Like when people get promoted, they jump into a bigger pool. And it's like, whoa, okay, now I know nothing about jiu-jitsu. I got to start again, right? And it happens in the spiritual life as well. As a priest, I see this all the time. I see it with myself, with my spiritual father. And I see it with the people that I confess, right? It's like that, you know, you kind of go along and then you get complacent maybe in your spiritual life. And then something happens and you're like, oh, crap, I'm actually weaker than I thought I was. And I gotta kind of, you know, come back to it. Or maybe I was weak in fasting. I was weak in church attendance. Or I was weak in, you know, in you know, my reading the scripture or whatever I was doing, right? And then I let that go, and then something happens that, you know, usually the devil hits us when we're weak, right? So
yeah. And you know, one thing you had said, you kind of briefly mentioned confession, and I kind of thought, you know, when like we mess up, or if we go to confession, you know, once a month or every however often we go, you know, when we kind of, the whole idea of confession is we well, we confess, but it's when we admit that we didn't do something right, or when we kind of admit that we did something wrong. And of course, then our Father Confessor kind of goes over, kind of works through this with us and says, now you kind of struggled with X, Y, and Z. Here's what you need to do to avoid that kind of pitfall again. And I find something like that sometimes when I roll against like a purple belt or a brown belt at the gym, and I go, like I try to go for single leg X or something like that, and it totally falls apart. And like, all I end up doing is just pulling someone into mount, and I'm lying there. Yeah. That didn't work.
Yeah.
And then afterwards I'll tell them like, what do I have to do? What did I do wrong there? And then they kind of walk me through it. It's like, I just own up to it. Like, all right, I messed something up evidently. And I kind of paid a price for it there. What do I do going forward so that it doesn't happen? And they kind of give you the tools. Like one guy said, he's like, you never have control of my collar. I mean, you're just kind of throwing yourself into single leg X, but you don't have control of my collar. So I can kind of do whatever I want. It doesn't do anything to me. So now it's like, I make a point before I even think about that. It's like, reach up and grab for the collar. Now, lo and behold, I'm having more success with that. You know, and it's kind of like that. It's like, you know, when you're struggling with a particular passion and you're saying, I keep falling into this trap, what do I have to do? And it's like, when you feel that kind of temptation coming on, you know, don't focus on it, focus on this instead. And then you suddenly find it's like that kind of passion and that struggle. It never goes away, of course, but you feel like you have the tools to kind of handle it when it first starts to arrive. And, you know, ideally you just keep putting distance between yourself and that. So I guess in a way there might be a little connection there.
It's medicinal, right? So it's a huge connection because, you know, as opposed to, for example, like the Western, like let's say the Catholic approach to confession, which is more punitive, right? The theology of sin, the whole theology is completely different. So, you know, this idea that you sin and you go to confession because you have to pay off the wages of sin, and you have to do penance because you have offended God, right? Whereas in the Orthodox Church, there is no concept of that. Like, yes, there's guilt because the guilt is a natural, you know, reaction of the soul, right, and the conscience to doing something wrong. But confession is not about making you feel bad. It's not supposed to be, at least if you have a good confessor. It's like going to a doctor and giving your symptomatology and the doctor diagnosis. So you don't hit somebody over the head when they tell you they have cancer, or you are the doctor, you say, I have symptoms, I have this and this. The doctor doesn't yell at you and say, well, how dare you have symptoms? Like, you know, it's like, you have the symptoms. Okay, well, let's diagnose and find out what the problem is so I can give you the appropriate medication. And so it's like, the point is, and that's what I love about the Orthodox Church, that especially when it comes to confession and spiritual guidance, is that it is always forward thinking. And it's always has the goal at the therapy of the person to make them whole and to make them better. It's the exact same thing what I do with my instructors. It's like, I went to a competition. Okay, maybe I won or lost, whatever. I go to my professor later if he has time, whatever, or maybe in a private. We sit down, we watch the video of the fight, and he gives me a breakdown. Okay, well, you did this wrong, but not like in a mean way, saying, "Oh, you're such an idiot. We just did this right." It's never that approach. It's more like, okay, let's break down where you're weak in your game, okay, and let's drill those things so that we can kind of shore up, you know, so next time you go into it, you are better well-equipped to deal with that adversary and those attacks. In the same way, like you said, you're better equipped to deal with a temptation. You might still fall again, right? We all do. But if you can lessen the amount of the sin or the frequency of the sin, just like rolling, you're rolling all the time. You're rolling multiple times a week. If you're training a lot, you're multiple hours, right? You're gonna lose a lot and you're gonna win a lot, right? But if you slowly, you know, you slowly do the mistakes less, well, overall, over a long period of time, you're getting better. That's the whole point, right? And then so it's like you are making less mistakes. Because really, what's the difference between a white belt and a black belt? It's like the fundamentals are the same, and you can learn a million different techniques in jiu-jitsu. Some black belts, for example, have a plethora of techniques that they use. And there's some black belts that just hit the same five techniques over and over again, but they're just so damn good at it, right? Like, you know what they're going to do and you still can't stop it because it's such a perfect execution, right? So they know where their weaknesses are, or they know, what their strengths are, and they play to them perfectly. And that's what makes them a black belt, as opposed to the white belt, where it's like, oh, okay, I know where my weaknesses are, but I don't have the faintest clue of how to stop it, right? Sure. Or how to change, right? So but the approach is the same, right? So a good professor, good instructor is very much like a good spiritual father, even though it's not a spiritual thing, but it's aimed at the therapy of your game, right? Just like the priest is aimed at the therapy of your soul. But the approach I find is very similar in orthodoxy and in jiu-jitsu.
Yeah. And it's interesting. One thing you were saying about some black belts have kind of five things really that they tend to cycle through. It's almost, it reminds me in a way, there are some saints where it's like they were brilliant scholars and they went around the world and read widely and spoke to massive crowds or anything like that. But then you also have some saints that were so simple and they weren't very learned people, but through their kind of struggles, they kind of achieve some sort of enlightenment that a lot of others just marveled at. And it's kind of like there's some black belts that it's just like they know everything about everything, it seems. And then there's some where it's like they kind of hit the same 5-10 moves, and it's like you sit there and you're like, it's so simple, but how do they keep pulling that off? And I don't know, it's yes. Maybe that's another kind of parallel where it's like it looks differently for everybody. You know, practicing orthodoxy looks different for someone else. You know, the way I practice it, the way you practice it, the way any Orthodox Christian practices it at all, there are differences and similarities, but, you know, it's kind of like the same struggle in a way. So.
Mm-hmm. Sure. Well, I think that's a great time to kind of close out. It's a good kind of a final thought. We are at an hour, believe it or not. It was kind of flew by. I looked at my clock. I'm like, oh, I thought we were only speaking for like half an hour. but when you have good conversations, time flies. And I think that's a good kind of place to stop it. But I really enjoyed our conversation, Joshua.
Likewise.
And thank you for your insight. It's like, as I said, it's nice to meet different types of people. And of course, not just Orthodox, but of course, the majority of people that we speak to are Orthodox. But kind of hearing about your journey, and you know, you're in a unique position where you've kind of jumped into these two worlds within the kind of span of 2 years apart from each other. So we never really had anybody like that. And it's fascinating to kind of see you're in a position to kind of compare those things. That's why I asked you those questions. I wish you, much success in your jiu-jitsu journey. I do hope that you get the blue soon whenever it's time for you. But you know, and I'm sure we'll come with time. But I hope that you train forever. You don't stop,
yeah.
Or do the curse of the blue belt. You know,
no.
Take off after you get your blue.
No way.
You know, just like Orthodox, right? Because you know you got converts too, right? You know this, right? You might have seen it. You got people that come into the faith, like you said, they're zealous, but with that zealousness, the zealotry comes expectations, right? And then those expectations get like shattered always. Yes. And then some people they leave. They ditch right away because they're like, oh, this is not the church that I expected. This is not the church I had in my mind, right? Like, well, yeah, because it's not about what you have in your mind.
It's kind of like in both instances, it's like the old quote, slow and steady wins the race.
Yeah. Yeah, that's right. Nice and slow. And you said, you settle into a flow, right? Not too much, not too little, just kind of it's a good pace, longevity. And like, you know, you don't want to burn out. There is spiritual burnout too, right?
Oh, yeah.
You too much too fast, right? Or you push yourself, or if you have a family one day, like, you know, it's like you push yourself too much. And I think there needs to be a kind of like a slow escalation, you know, moving towards a better thing. But it takes time and patience, right? So awesome. Thank you very much for coming on. I hope that maybe in the future we'll have you on again, or maybe we'll meet in person. And now that things are kind of almost back to normal with the world and we start training and traveling and things like that. And maybe I'll come out to Ohio or something, or maybe you'll be up here in Canada. I know we have a mutual friend, right? We have Sophia.
Yes. Yep.
Yes. Yeah. And so, you know,
Ohio and Ontario, we're not too far. So
yeah,
maybe I know.
Yes.
Either way, maybe I'll come up there. We'll see. But This was a lot of fun. I really enjoyed this. So thank you, Father. Thanks for having me on.
Thank you for coming, and we'll talk soon. Thanks.
All right. Sounds good.
You have been listening to The Fighting Priests. Feel free to download us on Spotify, Apple iTunes, or anywhere else you get your content. Check us out on Instagram at The Fighting Priests. And if you have any questions, feel free to email us at thefightingpriests@gmail.com. Till next time, keep training the body and the soul.